All right, welcome to episode number 40 of our podcast, Up on Foil. Today, a very special guest. We have Ben and Marcus Tardrew here from Code Foils. They've been building Code Foils for 3 years now, and they're a group of four or five, not sure, and we can just get into that. Is there anything you want to add right away? Because it's not very clear to me how many of you are at Code and how it works there.
There is like a extended family at Code that help us and do different sort of jobs. But Code was founded and has four owners. So my brother here and me, and also James Casey, who I'm sure most people know, and also Dan, who lives in Perth. So that's the four owners. And Josh, who you probably see a lot of, is our marketing guy. And you know, he's sort of our first nearly full-time employee, I guess. We always sort of used to joke around with him that we want to have him at Code, and then it slowly sort of happened. And yeah, now we're lucky to have him, and I think he likes having us. So, and also my brother's partner does some our accounting. So yeah, we're like a big family. We have some extended people that do some jobs for us as well.
And you've been doing that for 3 years now.
I think maybe just under that, but it must be getting close. Yeah,
that's if I look at like the foiling history, my foiling history as well, that's not a long time really. There were a lot of brands already present. Why did you think that we need to make our own company? Because we're missing something maybe, or you thought like we want a part of that cake as well?
You go, Ben.
Okay. I don't think there was any like spark and any one moment that made us start Code Foils. I think personally, I think my first foil I built was in 2018, so much longer than 3 years ago.
Okay.
And around about the same time, Marcus was basically just modifying every foil he owned. So we were kind of making our own foils a long time ago, and we're just slowly getting better and better at it. But never really with the idea of that we're going to start a brand or anything, just making foils. And then it kind of got to the stage where everything was sort of, the brands were out with their setups and all the joins and connections were all out there and sort of in place. And we kind of wanted, you know, we started making stuff and we thought we could just, for us, we felt like we could improve the setup for ourselves. And that's sort of when we got a little bit more serious and built a full setup with the mast and everything. And yeah, once we all tested it and put it on the water and let a few other people test it, then we knew we were onto something pretty special.
Was it like straightforward, or you had to do like hundreds of tests with hundreds of people to get to the point where you were like really happy with the product?
I guess it, technically we did a lot, but because we were always making foils, you know, even if it wasn't with the view of starting Code, that was never really on the radar. We were just making our own foils anyway to use. So we were unconsciously doing the testing already, I guess. I was doing a little bit of work with Adrian at Axis when foiling was a lot smaller then, and downwinding was definitely very, very small. And I kind of was helping them, I guess, learning with them what worked for downwind foils. We all learnt a lot, as everyone was, I guess, at that time. You know, the foils were changing every 3 to 6 months. If you didn't have a new foil, you were literally, you know, you were left behind. So it was actually really cool to be part of foiling then. So I think unconsciously we were doing a lot of testing to develop Code Foils without knowing that Code was going to happen. And then when we decided to do it, we had a lot of stuff in the bank already. And we made our first prototype, which was the 850S and the 150 tail and a 75 mast. And we got it prototyped and we used it and loved it straight away. As an all-round foil, it does, we could downwind it or surf it or anything. There's probably better pure race wings or better pure surf wings, but as an all-rounder, we were really stoked with it. So we were like, let's just release it. And we restarted the company just with that one set. We started it with one mast, one front wing, one fuselage, one tail. And I think we might have ordered whatever the money we could put in stretched to. We ordered that amount. It wasn't much. And we sold them all and then we ordered more. And Code has literally been built up just from that. And I think maybe we had to chuck in a little bit more money maybe after the second or third order. But yeah, we pretty much all put in just whatever we had and hope for the best.
Yeah, I think after the second order or the first time we released a couple of different sizes, yeah, like personally, I was digging into my home loan to put more money into so we could buy more stock. So yeah, we all had to dig into what we had and just chuck it in and hope everyone else felt like we felt.
But that's kind of risky. I mean, do you guys have families?
Yeah. So I warn the kids, like, it's just going to be oatmeal for a year if we don't sell foils. Easily, please, they can have milk and bread and they're happy.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And good foils.
I don't know. So the risk for me was way lower. It was only me that was going to starve. So, yeah. Everyone else in the business has kids. Dan has three because he's crazy. And so, yeah, it was a huge thing, I think, that everyone, it's kind of cool. Everyone just was so passionate about it and had enough faith to just chuck in kind of everything they had and hope for the best. And yeah, even more, like, I definitely loaned a fair bit of money from, I think my partner lent me a bunch, you know, to get that second loan through to Code. And yeah, all worked out good in the end, but there was potential for
it. Was that your idea to start the company? Whose idea was it? Was it like everyone hanging out together? Like, we should like start a band. No, we should start a company. Or did you like discuss it with some like on a desk, or how did that start?
I know that I've been working with James for a long time at Sunnova, before foiling was around, quite a long time before that. So we kind of were always thinking about something, you know, maybe in one day. And Jimmy's dad always was like super supportive. He kind of wanted us to do something, and he was always wanted to like try and help us build something at some stage. And then Ben was working with another company, and yeah, we just kind of spoke about it, and Ben thought, you know, like he was good, he's good friends with the other company he's working with, but also he was it wasn't his own thing, I guess, and Ben wanted to do that. And so the three of us just decided just to do it. And then Dan actually came in later. The weird thing about Dan being in the business is that I just by coincidence moved into his street, and I didn't know Dan super well. I knew him from SUP paddling, so not foiling, before foiling. And I knew that he was an architect, so he could do CAD. And me and Ben aren't very good at CAD, but we design our foils on a different software, like where it's actually quite easy to do. And then he does all the CAD stuff, like builds the fuses and stuff. So I asked Dan as a favor, you know, can you maybe help us design this foil and put it all together and add all the bits that need to be added to our foil designs? And he was super pumped to help out. But we quickly realized it was a massive job and he needed to be part of the business. So, yeah. And
I think it was Dan's idea. He said, on a call, he's like, oh, I'd love to buy in. And we're like, oh, what? And it was, yeah, like Marcus said, we realized pretty quickly that we needed Dan's skill set. And even to this day, with all different things that we never thought of, Dan's really great at. Like, yeah, every day I'm asking him to do something that I can't do.
Nice. So are you happy with how it's going at the moment? You started with one setup and now you have a big range of foils. Maybe we can talk about those later.
Yeah. I mean, I can probably speak for the other guys that, yeah, we're we're really happy. I'm kind of, I mean, like we saw you recently in Switzerland in a place where we never thought we'd be foiling, and we've got foils that work really well there. And you guys taught us how to dock start on our biggest foil that we have. So yeah, I mean, we never thought we, like, even maybe a year ago, I never thought we'd have a, oh, I nearly spilled the beans, a big enough foil for me to learn to dock start in, you know, half a day or whatever it is. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it's unexpected, but it's, and it's areas that we never really thought we'd get into, but like to come and see you guys and how exciting it is. And I don't even know if it's about actual foiling or if it's actually about just hanging out on a dock with everyone, but it's so much fun. So yeah, I mean, just stuff like that. And then, yeah, before that, we were in the UK in freezing water, surfing these cool little bays and stuff. So to have the range that we have now, that we can sort of go anywhere and use a foil from our range, is pretty, pretty cool. And like, definitely a year ago, we probably, 2 years ago, we definitely wouldn't have imagined having foils in the sizes that we do now. And it's, yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, I'm stoked, and I know the other guys are.
So you did this Europe tour. Maybe we could just talk about that before we go into the range. And I want to hear your both of your experiences dock starting, because Kyle and me, we come basically from dock starting, and it was new for you. That would be super interesting. But that Europe tour you did, how long was it? Where did you go? And what was like the most fun things for you to do? Or was it just work? Because basically you were doing demos and whatnot.
Yeah. One of our big dealers in Barcelona, he runs a race now, a downwind race. So we wanted to go and take part in that race just because, I mean, that's what we like doing. But also it's nice that you can support your the people that support you as well. So that was a really cool way to start the trip. So we booked that trip, and we thought while we're in Europe, you know, we should trip around and go to some of the spots that we haven't been to yet and visit some of the other dealers. And it's always good to see the scene, because we don't, everywhere is so different, which is what we're learning. And you got to try and adapt to each area, or, you know, just check what works, what we're missing in the range potentially. So yeah, we were like, let's go from there to, I think we went, yeah, from there, UK, maybe 3 days. So it was quick. And then on a ferry to France, and we were there for 3 days as well, I think. And then, to Switzerland for 3 days. I think the whole trip wrapped up in 2 weeks, and we went to four different spots.
10 aeroplanes, I think.
Yeah, we're on a lot of planes and a boat. but it was really cool.
What did you learn from the trip in terms of a community? Or you mentioned maybe something is missing in the range. Did you have some ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we learned that our range is pretty good. Like we've got the sizes to cover almost, yeah, like 90% of the disciplines for 90% of foil levels, I guess, like from, you know, beginners to advanced, we're pretty well covered. There's probably like a little gap in the very early beginner market for us, because at the moment we don't have an aluminium mask. So something like that is potentially, yeah, I mean, that's something we'll have coming. So, I mean, we already sort of knew that was the case. So I guess we didn't learn it, but yeah, sort of reinforced it. as far as like learning about all the areas, I mean, for me, it was so good that all the people that support us in these different countries are the guys that are at the beach foiling, and they love it just as much as us. They're not necessarily the biggest or the best shots or whatever, but they're at the beach foiling every day, and they love it, and they understand foiling, and they understand what we're about. So for us, that was probably the highlight of our trip. And yeah, like I said before, the communities are, like, not just saying it, like the community in Switzerland was amazing. Like to see 100 people on a dock on a lake that was like must be 10 degrees is amazing. Like it was a real, it was a real pleasant surprise. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to admit, coming to the Docstart demo at the end of the trip, you know, and we'd already, you know, rushed around, and I was like, this could be real work, you know, like we're going to do some foiling that we don't do. And, you know, it is all work, but it's super fun work where I just can't believe that we do it still. But Switzerland ended up being one of the funnest demos of the whole trip. It fully blew me away. The, like Ben said, I don't even know if it's the actual skill of dock starting, even though the challenge is cool and it's a way to get on the water. It's the whole thing, like everyone around, just, yeah, it's like there's a bit of a buzz around, you know, you got so many people all lined up on the dock and, yeah, everyone's.
Yeah, I think for us it's like something, I mean, all the countries we went to, we were doing stuff that we do all the time, and yeah, to come to Switzerland and just be so surprised about, you know, the community and I think learning something new is always a lot of fun, you know, like.
That's true.
No matter how, you know, you can do something and you get to the level where one day you wished you could be, but actually getting there was the most fun. So yeah, like for me, the first day where you guys were like, just jump on the board and throw it and jump, I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like a meter in the air. This is crazy. And like, what do you mean you go foiling with sharks in big waves? I'm like, no, this is crazy. And I think I must have crashed like 20 times, just like, I'm like, this is not happening. And then I just sort of tried my own little way, like in more of a surf stance sort of takeoff. And as soon as I sort of felt familiar, it worked. But yeah, it was so foreign to be doing it the way you guys do it.
But it's so cool to see, because you are super good foilers, but new to dock starting. For us, usually it's the other way around, or not the other way around. We know nothing. So we have to like jump on the board or maybe run and hop on and then figure out how the pumping works. So for you, it's super cool to see you guys first, like having some trouble getting the start on, but as soon as you were on foil and having speed, we saw like, oh, these guys are so good. It's so cool to see.
Yeah, what I took away from Switzerland was how crazy it is that you guys foil, first of all, because of what you just said. You must have gone through, like, it's hard enough to foil in waves or, you know, whatever. But to learn dock starting, first of all, just figuring out how to land on a board and then figure out how to pump must have just been unbelievable. But the thing that I really thought was, I really want to develop a foil that I can get like my partner to learn to dock start on,
yeah,
who's not a foiler, and make it super easy. And obviously dock starting not being, you know, what we do, and not being a part of that community, and probably, to be fair, not even realizing how big it is. It's probably one of the last things that we've had to develop. I guess also, you know, we can only do so much. We've been pumping out what we can over the years, but yeah, it's super exciting to keep seeing what needs to be done and what we need to develop. And that definitely, like, something super big and easy, I think that someone could learn to potentially dock start maybe in one day. I think it would also be the same foil that anyone could paddle up on a SUP. That'd be cool to have something like that. I think it might be massive, but it might still be cool.
Let's talk about your range, and maybe just what I like about dock starting is also talking about foiling. Like, I cannot shut up about foiling, and usually, well, at least for myself, I cannot foil forever. So the exhaustion and just coming back on the dock and talk about these guys about foiling, that's also a big part, and that's what I really like. But let's talk about your foils, because you've got this S and R series. And I always thought, well, S is speed and R is, I don't know, something else. But the S is actually the more easy foil. Is that correct?
They're both, I would say our foils are both pretty user-friendly for the range they fit in. But the S, if you were going to have to call it something, you would call it like more of a surf range than the R. But really, the S range is, it's really our all-round foil. So you can surf that foil at a really high level and you can downwind that foil at a really high level, it will still go really fast. And the R series is really, I mean, you guys on the lakes there, it's great. You can pump and glide. It's really efficient. And we saw Tim doing some crazy stuff on the 1250. Crazy. Like, it blew my mind. So, yeah, I mean, the 1250s for the R series is basically built for efficiency. So you want it to glide. You want it to go fast, but with less effort. Whereas the S, you have to put more input into it, but it will turn better, it will maneuver better. It's a more solid feel. So generally a beginner, yeah, I would say start on the S. But if you can foil and you're into downwind, then the R series is pretty user friendly still, yeah.
So S stands for, yeah, surf. What does R stand for?
I don't have meaning.
Oh.
They're just like, I guess... You know,
that was just an example.
Yeah, like an R, you know, an M series or whatever. It's just defines that. It's just a way of, you know, putting him, okay, in a category, I guess. But I found the S series easier to dock start. That was interesting because,
really?
I had no idea what would be easier. The 1540 for me was,
yeah,
like third go I had it, and I know the 12, even after I got it on that, it still took me a few goes to get the 1250.
Yeah, I was the same. When I was learning to dock start, the 1540 felt more comfortable, for sure.
That's interesting. What I was impressed by is that both these foils, it was like going on tracks. They were super stable. Maybe it was also due to the mast. Maybe we can talk about that as well. But it was no wobbly, no like quick. Well, you could do quick turns, but it's not. I was always under control, and that's what I really liked about these foils.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like you said, starting from the mast, we've always prioritized like stiffness in all our setups. Like I said before, when I used to build my own foils, I used to glass everything together. So the foil and the mast, oh, wow, and the fuselage was all one thing. So I couldn't go anywhere in the world with my foil, but it was really stiff, you know, there was no moving. But because of that feeling, then we always wanted to prioritize that when we started code. And even our standard mast is still very stiff. You can see at the base plate, it's quite a big blend, like a real chunky section. So yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. If you have a flexible mast, you definitely get that wobble. But yeah, like you said, if you push on it, you can turn, and it's predictability is what we want. We want it to be able to turn and be smooth, but you want it to be predictable and no sudden, you know, shakes or flexing through the setup. And it's through everything, the joins, the mast, everything. Like it's all, there's 5% here, 5% there, and it all adds up to, if you can get it all right, then it gives that feeling like you describe.
So you prefer it to be a little bit heavier, maybe a little bit wider, but be super stiff. That's your main goal.
The main thing with our mast is to get a lot of the stiffness built up high,
yeah,
so where it's out of the water.
Yeah.
And you can see, and I mean, a lot of the companies do it now, and it's tapered down to the bottom. So when you're sitting halfway or above, you're still, the mast is still quite thin and fast, but you get a lot of the stiffness in the top half.
Makes sense.
And I guess referring to the weight question, we've always prioritized stiffness over weight. We do personally believe that we get better results from a stiffer, heavier foil. If it needs to be, if we need to keep adding carbon to make it stiffer, it'll be a better foil than that foil if it was flexy and light.
Yeah, totally agree. Maybe now, as I've learned that S and R don't stand for anything, then I look at the tails, they're R and AR. Doesn't stand for anything either.
The AR actually did, which is weird. So, and they probably actually did have meanings once, but now they don't. And the reason I say that is because we're going to release a dedicated surf foil. So now the S can't be surf. So that's why they don't mean anything.
I think at the time we had it in our head that it was a surf foil, but yeah, Now we just say S and we play dumb. I was like, we don't know what.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, how about
one of the most exciting things that we've done so far, I think, for me, is the foil we're about to release, which is this surf foil. And yeah, that's going to be called an X, which But there's no
What's
reason.
going to be special about that?
It's all about carving. It's not as efficient as the S, so lower aspect again. It just turns good. And it's not going to be for someone who's getting into surfing and they're still learning to link up waves. So, like, you know, ride a wave and pump back out. And if you can't do that, this foil won't be for you. So it's not going to be for any beginner or sort of that beginner to intermediate. The S foil is still magic because it can carve, but when you're learning, you're not really carving. You're just going straight. Yeah. And then the first box you sort of want to tick is pumping back out and linking up a wave. And then that unlocks everything. So that's still going to be the best foil in our range to learn to surf foil on. This foil is more for that intermediate to above, I guess.
Yeah, I think like carving, like for us surfing in the waves, for you guys, like behind those wake boats, it would be really nice. That's we actually used our new foil behind the boat in Zug. Zug. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it actually worked really well there. So and also for guys with wings that are turning a lot with their wings. So that's sort of the priority with the new foil. Yeah, we're excited for that one.
Very nice. When is it going to come out? When can people order that?
Cool. Probably like 3 months away. I know you're speaking to Josh tomorrow. You might want to ask him for some footage of him behind the boat. It was
super
impressive. Yeah. That was the first time I'd been on a wakeboard boat, and that was a cool experience.
Was it easy for you to start? Just personal question.
I've done a lot of towing behind jet ski, so I know how to do that. We all have done a bit of that, so it was fine. But it was the first time behind a manufactured wave, I guess you call it. I don't know. It was so sick. I had a ball. It was freezing, but it was fun.
And it was warm then. It was sunny. It was nice. If you would have come a week earlier, we would have had below 10 degrees and rain and wind. Ooh. And so you were lucky to pick that weekend.
The 3-meter wetsuit was not cutting it. 3-2
We were talking about names. I don't know if you guys mentioned it already when I had this connection problem, but you, like, how did you come up with the name Code?
You came up with the name, Marcus, I think.
Yeah, I was driving to northwestern Australia. It was a trip we used to do. I used to live in Western Australia. I don't now, but once a year we would drive up to this place called Exmouth, which is pretty much foil heaven. It's coral reef. It's amazing. It's where they finished the downwind run on Hugh Mitchell's new little short movie that he's released, which I don't know if it's available for the public yet or not, but it's just amazing. But anyway, we're just driving. It's a 13-hour drive, which probably sounds crazy to you guys, but that's a surf trip for us. It is on the West Coast anyway. The West Coast is a lot of nothing, so yeah. It's a bit different now that I'm on the East Coast, but we were just driving and my partner Lisa was driving at the time, and it was obviously right at the start. So I just took some graph paper with me and I was playing with designs and stuff of, you know, all sorts of stuff. I was just doodling. And then I think the radio was on and I just heard the word Code, and I was like, I just drew it and I drew that triangle. Like literally did the logo and kind of the font on graph paper, and that was it. There was no meaning behind it, except the orange in the triangle was originally supposed to be like the northwest Australian dirt, which is really this orangey sort of burnt orange color. It's an amazing color, especially against the blue water up there. But the color ended up changing a little bit, but that was pretty much the only thing that had any relevance. It had no relevance. There's no reason for the triangle. There's nothing. I just thought, if you can name a company Nike and have a tick, then surely you can have a company with a triangle. That's just...
I think the only way we could justify The only way we could justify it was the three-sided shape because there was three of us at the time.
All right. What I for myself, like in Switzerland, it was quite interesting to see because I've never heard of code, and then suddenly it started to appear, and everyone was just saying they're the best for downwinding. They're so good. Jonas talked about it, Nils Mangold, because they're doing these downwinders on Lake Neuchâtel, and everyone was super hyped about code foils, and I was super happy to try them when you came over. So that's really cool how they, for me, appeared out of nothing and they were at the top immediately. That's super interesting.
Yeah, I guess there would have been some codes in your area very early on in code's life because we met Andy. He's the dealer for anyone listening, I guess, in Switzerland. But he was at a Sunova dealer meeting in Thailand and we did our first ever presentation of our foil set, which was one foil and a tail wing and a fuse. And he was like, yeah, I'd be keen to try and sell you foils. So he was probably him and Xavi from Wind Paradise, who was the guy we were visiting in Barcelona. They are the two probably first dealers that we ever had. So yeah,
so they were around, they just didn't pop up in my bubble. It's very interesting. Always sometimes,
yeah.
People are super important in the foil industry and they just didn't appear on my feed, so it's
yeah,
really personal. Well, I guess thing. we didn't really have the range of foils for your area for a long time, so like the release, our second release was like a 980 and a 720, which is still not going to be ideal, yeah, for dock starting, you know, and that's the S series. So is it for a long time we didn't really have anything to push into. I mean, Andy was probably using the 850 behind his boat, but that's about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you guys can probably dock start an 850, but it's probably not ideal and you're not going to have as much time on foil. So it would have been at least a year till you had some sizes.
Marketing, Bongi.
Sorry?
We didn't have anyone doing any marketing either.
Yeah, no marketing either. That's true.
We all had day jobs. So yeah. There was no one. We didn't even have roles in code. We just started selling foils with no idea what was going to happen. So, yeah.
And now you have titles and business cards and whatnot.
Still don't have business cards, actually. But, yeah, we do have roles and titles. So we're getting a little bit more professional, but I would say we're still pretty far from very professional.
How does it feel to see so many people riding your stuff and being like so happy about it?
Oh, it's amazing.
It's always amazing for us. I mean, for the Europe trip we did for Barcelona, I think I was a little bit surprised. Like, I knew we were quite popular in Barcelona, but I think like I got to the beach in fourth and seven out of the top 10 were all on code. Like, I was watching them come in one after the other and one of the guys in front of me was on it. So to see that so far from home and at quite a high level was crazy. And even the UK, which is like, it's such a spread of all brands and we really hold our own there as well. So yeah, it's really in areas I didn't think we were necessarily, like I knew we existed, but there's always, you know, there's always a guy that tries it and loves it and he'll have it there in any area. But to see like at the beach and four or five guys rock up and they're on code is, yeah, it's really cool. And you never get, I don't think you ever get used to that. It's always exciting. Like, it, no matter where I am, if I'm at home and the guy rocks up, I'm like, oh, cool, code foil.
Nice.
It's cool.
Did you, have you ever had to sign a foil?
No way. I don't think most people at the beach wouldn't know. You know, you have a hat on, a wetsuit, you're in the water. I'm sure they wouldn't want me to sign us to sign their mask because they spend a lot of money on that mask.
Yeah, it is quite expensive. Let's be honest. And I'm always, because I see people coming up on with new foils to the beach or to the docks, and I'm like, how are people paying for this stuff? Because I'm barely like, yeah, as you said, oatmeal all day.
Yeah.
It's I guess the I mean, with us, we don't really, I'm not sure where we're at. I know with sort of some of the bigger brands, we're similar sort of price point. And I know there's some sort of cheaper brand as well. And you know, I think there's a place for everything. Like, it's great to have the cheaper brand as well. But for us, we're very selfish. We want our foils for ourselves. So we try to make everything the best we can make it. And if we have to spend a bit extra, then I mean, that's what we do. And you know, there's people that will always want that as well. It's not just us. So I
Sure.
mean, yeah. But yeah, like I said before, we want to release our aluminium so it's more accessible. And we can sort of compete more with the sort of the more entry-level price point.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. I want to get into your maybe personal lives, if you don't mind, because I used to be, or I'm a sailor, and I know that you guys sail 49er and very well. And I'm interested, how do you get into water sports? Was that something your parents, they put you on the water as soon as you could walk or swim? Or how did you get into water sports?
Well, me and Ben, up until probably the age of probably 8 for Ben and 10 for me, were obsessed with skateboarding. All I can remember when we were young was skateboarding, and Dad actually built our skateboard ramps out of fiberglass. He actually made a mold and made this cool system where he made a ramp with a 45 degree on it, and then you could stack another one on and make this big quarter pipe. And he made them out of fiberglass in a mold. So Dad made all his own boats when he was younger and stuff. So he didn't push us into sailing. Dad grew up sailing and racing, and still does. He just finished a race, Melbourne to Osaka, that with two people on board, and he's 75 years old, so he's still
Wow, that's
like loves
impressive.
sailing and is a bit of a madman. But I think the tipping point for me, and I would assume probably Ben, but when yeah, I would have been 10 or 11 roughly. Dad, he was a teacher and he just hated it. And he quit, he sold his house, or mum and dad sold everything basically and bought a boat. And we lived on a boat. And we were obsessed to try and make this boat go fast. Every time we did a passage, you know, from one place, we were like trimming it and checking what the speedo was saying. It was just a cruising boat. It was stupid, but we were just kids. And
How
when
old were
we
you?
ended up, I was 11 and 12 during the time, and Ben's 2 years younger than me. So, but we were obsessed with the water. We were driving around the rubber ducky on our own, like no parents. We'd be skiing behind it. You know, I'd tow Ben, then we'd swap. No parent supervision. It was just, I don't know, maybe it's different then, but this was the world that we lived in. We lived on the boat, and I got my diving ticket for my 12th birthday, which is like the youngest you can get it, just because we were just obsessed with being in the water. I remember getting my divers, while I was getting my ticket, I looked up and Ben was snorkeling above me, like 10 meters high, just like tiny kid, just on his own in the middle of the ocean. We were out on the reef. You couldn't even see land. And so we were definitely obsessed with the ocean from that point. And I remember when we got back to living on land back home in Melbourne at the time, we ended up getting into sailing. Like, that probably kicked off our love for sailing, and we started competing pretty much right up until after our trial for Athens. And then we decided we couldn't afford it at that level, that sort of Olympic level. And then so our original goal was China, which was the Olympics after that. We just couldn't afford to do it, so we ended up pulling the pin, and we bought windsurfers and just got into wave sailing. And yeah, that's have slowly evolved into what we do now, with a bit of sup racing in the middle there. That's probably a brief rundown of our life. I don't know, Ben, did I miss anything, or do you disagree with anything there?
Oh, no, it's pretty. I guess for me, probably the most memorable parts for me was, like during the week late at night, I'd go with my dad into the workshop, and mum had let him take me and help him sand and build boats. for me to race. So like as a young kid, that was pretty cool. And then like we did really well on these boats that we built in the garage. And I think that's probably a pretty important time to learn that you can just, you know, think of something and have faith in your hands and brain to build it. And then like the first boat we built together, I won an Australian championship on. And like it's called a flying ant. It's an Australian skiff, like for kids. So I think it's 12 foot long or something. So yeah, we were just like, let's build it. It's cheaper to build yourself. And obviously our parents are super, you know, they're smart people, and dad's good with his hands. And my mum was, she's obviously super open-minded and understanding to let her husband take her kids into a workshop covered in resin and paint and just let them go. But yeah, I mean, that's living on the boat was crazy, but for me to learn, you know, to be able to build stuff and use your brain even as a kid. And before long, after that, I was designing sails and making sails, and it all just stemmed on, and like just to have the confidence in yourself to go, oh yeah, I can make a sail, you know, like why can't I? And I think we sort of learned that at a pretty young age, even just the fact that you sell a house and live on a boat. It's like, why can't we do that?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that we were brought up with, if you can do it yourself, you do it yourself. You don't pay for someone to come and do it. You know, you can, that was, definitely, you know, I think also like dad worked really hard. When he was a teacher, he was also spray painting fences on the weekend, and he was also a cab driver all at the same time. So he was like, I can do this stuff. I can pull a trigger on a spray gun, so I'm going to start spraying fences and I'll do that. And like he was making all his own race boats, and then he made our race boats, and he taught us how to do that. So we could mix resin and, well, you know, we were making molds for these boats as well. So we weren't just building boats, we were making the molds and involved with all of that. And it's
mostly just sandpapering.
Yeah, we were just like laborers, but it was, we understood the process, which I think was cool. And we were so obsessed with wanting to go and use these things, like build them and then we weren't obsessed with sanding them, but we were kind of like, this is how you do it, you know, you got to do it. And this is how you do things yourself. It wasn't like, let's go buy a boat and then you can race it. That's not how our dad thinks. So it's kind of, now, you know, when you say it out loud in a story like that, it was probably obvious we were going to build something. I mean,
I was just about to say, like, there's a red line, or I don't know how you call that in English, going through your life, arriving where you are now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think it's all positive either, because like home renovations, when you don't want to pay someone and you do it yourself, doesn't always end up like ideal. So, you know, if something happens in my house, I'm like, I can fix that. And sometimes halfway through the job, I'm like, maybe I should have called someone for this one.
But you learn.
Yeah, but you learn along the way. Yeah,
that's the thing. You always learn a new skill, and half the time I'll just Google how to do something, you know. It's like it is so fun. Like I just built a fence at my house on the weekend. Like that is so typical of something my dad would have done, and now like we've just become nice. Him, I guess, like most people do. But yeah, it's kind of it is definitely interesting, because now the reason we got into producing foils was because we were producing them to use ourselves, and now we don't have to do as much of it ourselves. But yeah, we still, like Ben still makes all his own boards, which you would have seen when we were there. And yeah, it's just one of those things I think that has been ingrained into us to, you know, just do it yourself, that DIY mentality of, if you can do it and you've got the time, who cares if you got the money to buy one? Like maybe just try and do it. Yeah. Could be cool.
It's a different feeling as well. But you at Cole, you don't sell boards yet, do you?
So I make a lot of boards and I do sell them locally. And you've probably seen Jonas has a couple. I brought some over for him. And yeah, I mean, it's the same sort of thing. Like unless you build the board, you don't actually know what's inside underneath the carbon. And with foiling, I think that's probably the most important part of a foil board, what's underneath and what's connecting you to the foil. So for me, that's super important. And I think it's really hard to not build my own boards. Like, it's hard for me to use other boards, even if they're amazing. Like, I just don't know what's in between my foot. And sometimes even in my brain, I'm like, this doesn't feel right, but it's probably just because I don't know exactly what's under my feet. But yeah, I mean, I build some custom boards in Australia mainly because it's just too hard to ship them. But I do less and less because code is getting busier and, you know, code is the priority. So I used to build two or three sometimes a week, like dowing boards, and now maybe one board a month. So yeah, it's for now, it's more like if a friend or try to keep the circle close for who gets a board. I don't just say yes to everyone because I want to spend the time to make the board the way each person wants and the way I would build a board for myself. So, and because I'm limited for time now, I just want to do it right and focus more of my time on code and not stress myself with.
That's very nice. I just have a question about the story you said, you told us about your youth. Because what went through my mind is you were such a big skaters, and then you go on a boat, you cannot skate anymore. That must have been like a breach kind of. And then when he came back from being on sea for, what was it, 2 years, coming back on land, how were these transitions? Do you remember? How did that feel for you?
I clearly remember feeling really stupid wearing shoes. I just hadn't worn shoes for the whole time. And that was weird. The hardest thing I think for me was that when I came back, I started into high school, and high school had already started for a year. So I had no friends, and I hadn't actually interacted with kids, I think, you know, for that time. And that was a bit weird for sure. I just remember thinking it was hard being, it was just so different. We had just lived this amazing life that we loved, and there was no such thing, or there was no thing about peer pressure or being cool or anything. You were just living on a boat with no one around. It didn't matter.
Yeah, I really remember. I think I must have been grade six, and I was introverted anyway and a little bit crazy when I was around my family. But I remember when I got back to school, I couldn't be the same kid, because otherwise they would just like lock me up, you know. Like, this kid's crazy. So yeah, for me it was, I do remember really struggling for a while and like being super awkward, and I guess to this day I probably still am a little bit, but I remember for quite a while back at school, I was like, oof, this is hectic. And it wasn't like a big school or anything, but it was a lot of human beings around me.
All right. God, when I look at my list, I'm pretty much through. I have just one more question, because these demo days, for me, they were amazing. Trying your foils, and really, me as an average foiler, being able to dock start them was pretty amazing, and the speed that I got out of them, really impressive. When people want to test your gear, are you like planning another like demo tour, or where can they test your stuff?
First of all, while we were dock starting, we did not think you were an average foiler. Well, these guys are amazing. Well, anyway, let's just clear that up. We were super impressed with all you guys. So, but yeah, I mean, all the guys, there's actually two stockers in Switzerland, and any of our stockers on our website, like, I guess not all your listeners are in Switzerland, but they all generally have a demo set up, so people can contact them and they'll try their best to help them out with trying a set. Obviously we can't go everywhere all the time and do demo days. I mean, we'd love to, but it's just impossible. But it's I mean, hopefully we can come back and do the same sort of thing, you know, every year or two. But as far as someone just wanting to try them, I would just probably the best spot is just to look on our website. There's a section that says where to buy and look up the closest place and just give them a call. And I mean, all our sellers are great guys, great girls, so they'll try their best to help. And also we have ambassadors and riders like spread around the place. Like we've got Jonas in Switzerland. I'm sure he might not like me saying this, but I'm sure he would try to help out with someone going for a demo. But yeah, I'm sure he already does. Like I know he's already helped
people. Yeah, he does. I tried the sub foiling in the flat, super difficult, but he tried to help me. Yeah.
Yeah. He's great. He's really great. So yeah, we have guys like that everywhere, and we've got an amazing team. We're so lucky. A lot of these guys approached us as we started growing, and yeah, we have a whole chat full of all our riders, and they're all amazing, and we're so proud of them all. They all, you know, they support us and we try to support them as best we can. So if you can sort of source whoever's selling code, they can put you on to these guys, and they're always super helpful and they're always stoked on code. And yeah, that's probably the best way, unless Marcus has any other idea.
Well, just most of the dealers now, we have like a demo set up where we help them out, you know, trying to set them up with as much demo gear as they think is appropriate. And I think Andy as well, like Andy was really excited about the demo days. He was, I think he wants to run more of them. Same in France, like our dealer there, Greg, he just loved it. He's like, I'm going to do more of these. This is good, you know, and people are trying them.
And we just put on a dealer in Germany, Kai, whose shop is called Foil It. And he has some demo stuff as well. So we're spreading around. So yeah, like Marcus said, the dealers are the best start for sure.
All right. Very nice.
Yeah. Just one last question I had. It's about some future projects. You mentioned about maybe a more beginner wing and an aluminum mast. But you also have a paddle. So are you planning something else besides foils that you can reveal about?
Okay, Marcus.
We're always thinking about stuff, I guess. The amount of stuff that we actually have in the pipeline at the moment is insane. The surf foil project has been, we have done so many prototypes of this surf foil to get it into release that alone was, that must be close to a year, I would say. What do you think, Ben?
A year, because we had it at Hood River, so that's coming up. So yeah, pretty much a year.
But yeah, Alimas surf foil, always working on race foils, which, yeah, I mean, if something better than, well, not better, but if something different to the R comes out, maybe. We're trying everything. We're trying to go faster. Everyone knows that we're downwind foilers and we race. So we want to be on fast gear. So we're always toying with that. Now with downwind racing just being so massive, it's just crazy. The competition's high. So people are developing just race foils for downwind, which was probably unheard of maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago at least. There's heaps. We can't talk about all of it.
you're such pros already.
You could probably talk about, I think you touched on it before, Marcus, more of a beginner foil. Definitely. We're pretty passionate about that. And also aluminium mast. So they're two sort of things that we're pretty excited about, as much as, I mean, we probably won't use them, but we're excited to put them out in the world. So testing, and I mean, they're a little way off, but yeah, we're excited to get them out at some point this year, hopefully.
That second demo day we did in Switzerland at the other spot.
In Bern, yeah.
Yeah. Ben knows I'm always lost, so I forget.
Yeah, Bern, look, I bought a jumper.
Oh, check out his hoodie.
Oh, look at that. Nice.
What a tourist.
So cool.
I love that city. I had to buy a jumper, a sweater. And
you were
a hoodie,
on the mountains
whatever.
As well there. It looked great.
Yeah.
On the knees, it very nice.
But what I was saying, at that dock, the thing that really got my attention was there was a girl there, and she was taking like one step on the dock and standing on this foil almost stationary and pumping off. And I don't know if she was a beginner or that was just her chosen foil. Like, she was great at it, but I was like, we need to make that something that anyone, if they decide they want a foil, it's not gonna just break them mentally because it's so hard. That was the big thing from that demo.
Well, you talked about 20 starts until you got it. Usually we say it's about 300 ish. So
yeah, but you've got to learn to foil while you're learning to dock.
That's true.
I'm not surprised. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, and I take my hat off to you guys. The fact that you guys even foil is crazy. Like, I love mountain biking, and if I lived where you lived, I would not foil. I would just be living on the bike. It's,
you know, maybe
you guys
maybe
are amazing.
The grass is greener on the other side, but we all want to be surfers in any way possible. So that's what you have going or coming with Code. What are your personal things that you have up? Are you going to Hawaii for the big races?
Most of us are. Probably myself with young kids. I'll probably miss Hawaii this year after our Europe trip, and then shortly after Hawaii is Hood River. It's like a conference thing. So for me to do Hawaii, Hood River, and the Europe trip is maybe a bit much. So most likely I will not go to Hawaii, but I think I'm 90% sure Marcus is going to go. James will definitely go. That's he's super passionate about the Hawaiian races. Well, we hope he does pretty good. He just broke his ankle a month ago, so he's been on the bike a lot to get fit. But yeah, I mean, he's always up there. He's always pushing himself. So I think he'll be up there. He's very consistent. He's always close to the front. And I'm 90%. Yeah, Josh is definitely going as well. And Dan, the other owner, is he going? Yeah, Dan's going, isn't he, Marcus?
I don't think he was going.
Oh, no. Dan wants to go. Dan's doing Hood River. Yeah, so Hood River's very important for us, so we can't all do both.
Yeah, I got hip surgery after Hawaii, so I'm making it count. I'm going to go there and do a lot of foiling and then sit on the couch for a month or two.
All right. Guys, Guy, do you have anything else to ask?
No, that's enough. Thank you.
Is there anything you guys want to tell our audience, something that we've missed that we didn't talk about?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, we really appreciate talking to you guys, and we're stoked to be more involved with the European community now. So, yeah, I mean, we're just stoked. So we're excited to talk to you guys.
Thank you guys very much for taking your time. Nice. Super cool. Here it starts raining, and my kids is going to go out to the regatta, so I'm going to see if everything is fine. Thank you very much for coming on. For all the listeners, if you've missed Josh Q's episode, it's the last episode. Go check that out if you haven't listened to it yet. Next one, if possible, is going to be with Flo, a Swiss wing foiler. He just did the Defi wing, and I'm excited about to hear about his experience there. It was very windy, as far as I've heard, so looking forward to talking to him. Thank you for coming on the show. Thanks. See you some other time.
Yeah,
guys. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
See ya.